This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Thank God I Had a Stroke, A Stroke and Brain Tumor Survivor's Journey to Recovery. And the author, Barbara Gable Grecken. And Barbara joins us now all the way from Australia, Victoria, Australia. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Steve. Lovely to hear from you.
Well, great to have you with us. What an inspiration you are. And we're going to find out some of the details as you tell your story about life came crashing down upon you. You not only had a stroke, you had a brain tumor out of the blue, very busy, very successful, serving your family, doing so many things to help others, and then all of a sudden this adversity. When you found out I guess the stroke happened first, right?
Actually, they both happened exactly the same time. Well, I'll rephrase that. I didn't know I had the tumor, but we discovered it at the time I had the stroke.
Okay. So you have a stroke out of the blue. No warning signs whatsoever?
None whatsoever. I had just finished lunch. I had a cup of soup. I put the cup down on the table, and I was hit with unbelievable pain. To the point where I couldn't talk, I couldn't think, I couldn't see. It was just, please help me survive this pain. And that's when my husband called the ambulance.
And, of course, at that time, your husband is bedridden with back problems, and you're taking care of him.
Well, from time to time. Luckily, you know, it happens, seems to be in stages of 3 or 4 days at a time. He's just finished yesterday was his fourth day. But he had it again, and he's up again now. So, yeah, it sort of comes and goes. He might have a week or two up and then, a 3 or 4 days down. But we learned to live with that one.
And you were also at that time taking care of your elderly mother.
Yes, she was 90 at that time and unfortunately was nearly deaf. She had dementia. She also had a hip replaced and didn't recover from that terribly well and was on a walker. And she had bowel cancer and cancer of the uterus, and she'd lived with me for 28 years. So, you know, it was a total family commitment to my mum.
So how can you be so hopeful? Going through all that, seeing pain and suffering around you, what drives you? There's something within you.
Well, I actually go way back to my childhood. I was brought up in the Australian bush. I didn't go to school through primary school. I had to do it by correspondence. And in those days, you know, you had the responsibility of looking after animals and your plants. Your whole life was built in this home. And I only had one brother, so I had no peers. And you had to learn to, you know, build your own life of whatever entertainment or enjoyment you wanted. And I think I just got to be very independent, very strong-willed, very determined. Whatever I wanted to do, I did. I remember my dad had given us, one of those big 44-gallon drums that was an empty one, and he said, you fellas can learn to walk on that, and it's fun. And my brother was better at it than me, and I couldn't stand that, so I used to leave the table early at lunchtime and go out and practice till I was better than him. So I always had that streak in me, you know, that I had to be the best at what I did and I had to be positive about everything. So I think it came from way back then.
So how did you mentally cope with finding out about these two major illnesses at the same time? How did you cope with it?
Well, the thing that I found very strange was that when they told me, you know, that I'd had a stroke and they'd found this brain tumor and I had to be moved from my local hospital to a major city hospital in Melbourne, I remember on the ambulance trip, and this was at 1 o'clock in the morning I got there, so it was dark and it was, you know, everything was quiet around me. There was wasn't much traffic. And I remember thinking to myself, why don't I feel more afraid or more worried? It didn't seem to really register with me. And in some, to some degree, I think that was because the stroke had made me a bit confused and I hadn't quite taken it all in. So in actual fact, I handled that very well because it never seemed to me to be as serious as what it was. I just thought, oh, well, another problem, I'll overcome it like I've overcome all the others. I think my family, particularly my husband, was more concerned and stressed out than I was, actually.
When did you discover you couldn't read?
Oh, that was the trauma. The second day in hospital, when I sort of got up early in the morning because my back was aching and I sat in a chair and thought, oh, my husband had packed me a book to read because I'm a great book lover. And I took the book out and I'm looking at the front cover and thinking, this sort of looks familiar, but it looks strange. And I'm trying to figure out what about it was so odd. And I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe I've already got the book. It still hadn't registered to me that I wasn't able to read the title of the book. And I opened it up and went to read inside it. And I just stared in disbelief. And my initial thought was, good grief, Peter's gone and bought a book for me in another language. And it just looked like a jumble of letters. So I assumed, you know, it could be Greek, Italian, whatever. It just didn't look... I could see that they were letters, but I couldn't create any words from those letters. And then it struck me that I couldn't read. And that was the first and probably the only time that I broke down. And I remember a nurse coming and saying, look, things will get better, things will get better. And of course she was right. But at the time, my whole life seemed to revolve around my ability to read. So that was one heck of a shock.
That's so incredible that here you can't read, but you can write.
Yeah, well, they kept testing me for all sorts of things to do with the stroke. And at one test, they said, I don't think, at first they thought I'd lost my memory. Then they said, no, we don't think you've lost your memory. We think you're struggling with a particular problem that can't distinguish words. And they, one of the tests, they said, write your name. And I remember writing my name and looking at it. And when I looked at it, it looked wrong. And I said, oh, I don't think I wrote that correctly. And the nurse or the person testing me said, oh, yes, yes, that's right, that's correct. And she went on with some other tests. And when she left, I thought, if I can write my name, maybe I could write a sentence. And I had some paper and pen there. My husband packed that for me as well. And I started writing. And at first I thought, I can do it. It's not permanent. I can read and write. And then I realized I still couldn't read what I was writing. And I'm furiously writing. And I was on about page 3 when a group of about 5 or 6 doctors or surgeons actually were came past, and one of them, they came in groups like this to visit us all the time, and one of them said to me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm writing. And he said, does it make any sense? And I said, I don't know, I can't read it. So he took it from me and looked at it and handed it to all the others, and he said, it makes perfect sense. He said, you've got what we call alexia without a graphia. Took me about a year to learn that, to say that, by the way. And I realized alexia means you cannot read and agraphia means you can write. So all of a sudden, that trauma that I experienced on day 2 suddenly had light at the end of the tunnel because I could write. And if I could write, to me, that was more important. I figured I could get other people to help me with the reading, but I had to be able to write. So it was a wonderful feeling. And I guess because it was such a great feeling, I never got terribly upset or worried about what I couldn't do. That's when I started concentrating on what else could I do.
So a great lesson learned, obviously, a great lesson for all of us. Now, with all of this, with all this trauma and adversity and just the suddenness of it all, your greatest moment of fear dealt with your dog?
Oh, yes. That happened after I returned home. I was pretty weak and took quite a while. I suffered from the surgery for the brain. I had part of the brain touched that controls vomiting and nausea, and it was bruised from that surgery. And for 3 months, I suffered from quite severe nausea. So I was pretty miserable with that. And at this stage, my husband was in one of his bedridden stages. And my little dog, a Cavalier King Charles, I was on a chair with a recliner chair with my feet up. And unbeknownst to me, she got in under it, having a sniff around. And I went to put the legs down on the chair, the footrest, so that I could go and get a glass of water. And I thought it sort of caught or didn't go down smoothly. And I thought, oh, my rug must be caught in it. It was winter time then. And I looked out. My rug was caught a bit. So I pulled it out and then just pushed hard and got the thing down. Went out to the kitchen, got a glass of water. And all of a sudden, I heard my little dog screaming, absolutely screaming. And I couldn't figure out where she was. And I'm saying, where are you, Cameo? But Cameo's deaf. She's an older dog and she's deaf. And finally, I sort of followed the screams and managed somehow, I still don't know how I got down on my hands and knees, and looked under the chair. And to my amazement, I could see her body but no head. And I had no idea what had happened. I mean, I knew she was caught there. I knew she was screaming like mad. I tried to tip the chair up. She screamed even louder. I couldn't get the footrest up. I figured that if I could get the footrest up, I might be able to get her out. But I couldn't manage the cusp because it's designed for when you're sitting on the chair, not when you're in front of it. And I thought, I've got to sit on the chair again. And then I'm worried that my weight might be worse for her. But I sat on the chair, got the footrest up. She still wasn't there. It was still a headless dog. And I thought, I'm going to have to get Peter to help me. Somehow I'm going to have to get him out of bed. And he was upstairs. So he came. He'd heard the screaming. And by the time I went to call him, he'd actually got to the top of the stairs. And he's saying, what the hell's going on? I'm saying, come quick. Cameo's caught. And, of course, Cameo's his darling dog. I've got two dogs, one sort of mine, one's his. And he sort of managed to get down the stairs as quickly as possible. And I thought I'd have to tip the chair sideways. And I said to him, you'll have to hold her weight while I tip the chair, because if she's caught around the neck, we're going to strangle her. She's going to be dangling. And as I tipped the chair sideways, somehow she got out. And she's running around the room, wagging her tail, everything's fine. And, of course, I collapsed. I cried and cried and cried and cried.
So as you look back, all this great, incredible journey that you've been on with pain and suffering and wondering what the future would bring, what's some of your messages to others who are struggling with whatever they're going through? What are some of your key messages?
Look, the first thing I'd say is you have to be positive. You can't afford to be negative. You can't afford to say to yourself, why me? Because quite frankly, why not you? Adversity hits us all as humans, and we have to learn to cope with it bit by bit. So somehow you've got to remain positive, and I feel the best way to remain positive is to think of others and how you can help them. When I was in hospital, even though I was attached by the legs to a thing that was plugged in and I couldn't sort of even get out of bed, I was sort of listening and hearing what was happening with the patients around me and was, talking to them and expressing, things that I thought they could do that perhaps could improve whatever was happening. And the more you think of other people, the less you think of yourself. And I just wish more people would make an effort to reach out to others in need, because when you do that, everything becomes less that you're suffering when you see how much worse other people are suffering. So that positiveness and caring for others is important. But I think one of the things that helped me the most was, first of all, setting goals. Instead of saying to yourself, I don't want to get out of bed and walk because it's too painful. So I'm going to get out of bed and I'm going to take 3 steps today. And tomorrow it's going to be 5. And the next day it's going to be 10. And then I'm going to be able to go to the toilet without assistance. And you set these goals, and you, it doesn't matter how little they are, you work towards them. But I think the thing that was the biggest wonderful sort of thing for me to handle was by setting myself a huge challenge. And by that I mean choose something that you really don't think it's possible to do, but you're going to do it. And with me, I couldn't read, so to me it seemed that a huge challenge would be to write a book. And honestly, on the second or third day in hospital, I decided I'm going to write a book. And I even had the title straight away. Thank God I had a stroke, because if I hadn't had the stroke, they wouldn't have found the brain tumour. And the brain tumour was very life-threatening. They figured I had about 3 months left to live if I hadn't found it. So to me, everything, once I had that title and made that decision, I just pushed and pushed. It took me over a year to get it written, and then another few months for the editing and to get it through to publication. But my husband said he reckoned it was the best therapy that I had out of everything that I did afterwards to help myself. So that's what I'd suggest to others. Create a huge challenge, and it doesn't matter how long it takes you to meet it, meet it.
Great advice, Barbara. Barbara Gable Greckin. She's the author of her book, Thank God I Had a stroke and Brain Tumors, Survivor's Journey to Recovery. Barbara, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's in a number of places. It's with Balboa, and it's with Amazon, mostly available through that stage on the internet, and it's through my own website, which is GaboGreckinStrokeRecovery.com, and it's selling moderately well at the moment, but I'm about to have a launch at Parliament House here in Melbourne with the Minister for Health, and after that I've been asked to speak at a number of events such as Rotary, etc. So I imagine the sales will start increasing then. So if you've had a stroke or a brain tumour, or if you know of someone suffering any serious illness, you know, perhaps the book would help you.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara, for your explanation of the tough thing you've gone through, and I guess much more than tough. It's been extremely difficult, and you've faced it with obviously great courage and hope. Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Okay, thank you for inviting me, and it's really great to be able to speak to someone so far away from Australia. Thank you.
It certainly is, and this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live la bella vita with Dawn Catherine on toginet.com. Live la bella vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live la bella vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live 2-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Healing People, The Marijke Method. And the author is Marijke Vandewater. And Marijke joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Marijke.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. This is a very unique view of helping people with all kinds of maladies, I guess. You know, you reach out to help people in all kinds of ways where the medical world doesn't seem to help them.
I do, and it's a great opportunity to be able to be on air today in order to get that word out and help express the importance of natural medicines and diet and nutrition and lifestyle, because really that's the root of all disease.
Well, you write about your book, you say that the book has information, the tools, and the methods for you to become well and to live a healthier and happier life. And the book will inspire you as it's based on thousands of success cases. So let's find out a little bit about your background, because you've been at this for quite a while.
I have. I've been in private practice for over 2 decades, and I specialize in people and all of their health problems, and I also specialize in horses, and I work with dogs and cats as well. So I originally started my practice, or I should say my studies in diet, nutrition, and natural medicine, in part because I was presented with my own health issues. And also, I really feel that it was a calling. I don't ever imagine myself doing anything else, because it was just so, such a deep program within me to become a healer and to study all the other natural modalities. I stay away from calling it alternative, actually, because in my world, it's mainstream, and I consider drugs and surgery to be the alternative. And so I started studying and achieved my degree in clinical nutrition as well as homeopathic medicine and science. And I added a lot of other modalities to it as I continued on in my path. So I also do energy work. And the biggest challenge when someone walks through my door, or I also do a lot of distance work, is to determine if the condition that person has is 100% physical, 100% emotional, mental or spiritual, or a combination thereof. So it's important to understand I'm always working from the underlying cause, the real and true underlying cause, so that you can root out the deepest reason for their health condition in the first place, and then devise or customize a health program from that point. And so as I learned to do this over the years in my practice, I've also practiced a lot of kinesiology, and so there, in my world, there had to be a way for that person's body, or that horse's body for that matter, to communicate to me what kind of imbalances they had, which organs were involved, which body systems were unbalanced, where a lot of the problems lied. So I came up and created the Marijke method, which is a four-step method using kinesiology, so that we can now identify where the problems are, what foods or diet programs are best able to help, and which foods should be avoided as hidden food intolerances or allergies, and also which specific nutrient deficiencies there are, and as well which remedies are of benefit. So those are things that the medical profession cannot help you with, simply because they not only don't have the training, but they also don't have any capabilities to get this information. And in fact, as far as nutrients, deficiencies are concerned, for example, in the medical profession, we have, of course, all the blood work and lab work, but it's very difficult to determine or identify someone's nutrient status from blood work. You cannot go to your doctor and say, am I getting enough beta carotene? How are my vitamin E levels? Am I getting too many carbs? So this is where kinesiology can really be a very accurate system of identifying all those problems for people. And because people are very, very unique, you're not treating arthritis when somebody comes in for help. You're treating the person who has the arthritis. So you can have 10 conditions of arthritis, and each one of those programs are going to be different.
Define kinesiology.
Kinesiology is a specialized method of muscle testing, and there's a few different methods of kinesiology out there. People will use muscle testing as a form of healing the musculoskeletal or the physical body. I use kinesiology, well, I'd rather call it energy testing than muscle testing, because every organ and body system is surrounded by or is an electromagnetic field. In fact, it really is nothing but light waves, which holds information and intention. So you can use that person's muscle, usually an arm muscle, to determine where the sensitivities or blockages are. So if I put my right hand on your heart and test the muscle strength in your left arm, then I'm able to determine whether there's any blockages or issues in the heart meridian or in the heart area. And you can do that for every organ in the body, and you can also do it for nutrients and the benefits of other remedies and so on. So it can be used, very beneficially. And I can also use the method at a distance. So that's why I work with so many people and horses at a distance, because you're really always working with the energy field. You're actually not working with the physical body so much as you're working with the energy field that's manifesting the physical body. And, of course, all disease is it appears in the energy field before it manifests in the physical body. And that's why holistic practitioners can truly say that they practice preventative health, because we can catch it many times before it actually manifests. And that's truly prevention.
Now, your whole philosophy is based on people have the power to help themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's where the power should lie, rather than giving our power away to other practitioners. I think the power really lies in ourselves, not only in our belief systems and setting intention, but being able to use a method like the Marika method to create your own health program, so you can determine what it is that your body needs, not what your neighbor needs or your sister needs or your kids or your husband or your dog, but you need to find out what kind of diet and nutrition program works for you and which natural remedies will be of most benefit. It's quite a jungle out there. There's thousands of different remedies to choose, and people walk up and down the aisles in health food stores wondering what's going to help them, especially if they're feeling desperate. So this method, the Marika method, can take the guesswork out of all of that and determine exactly what your needs are and what you will benefit from.
Now, would you say just about all health conditions can benefit from diet and nutritional therapy?
I think 99.9% of most health conditions and diseases will not only benefit from diet and nutrition, but in my 2 decades of practice, diet and nutrition is a major part of where the disease started in the first place. And even if there's issues that emotional issues, for example, that don't seem to have got their start with diet and nutrition, diet nutrition still plays a really big role in supporting the immune system and supporting brain function and stability. So, it plays a role in all imbalances, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. it's pretty hard to eat hamburgers every day and maintain a healthy meditation practice, for example.
Well, most of us, because of what we see on TV, it seems like the television is filled with commercials about take this drug or take that drug, and half the commercial is the benefit and the other half, you know, is the disclaimer that this drug could also end up killing you, or, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. But go ahead.
It's so true what you're saying, because we get completely bamboozled by marketing, and we get bamboozled by marketing of natural remedies too. So my rule of thumb is avoid anything that shows up on the nightly news on a regular basis. And I think
that's probably
that,
good advice.
A very good example is this over-marketing of vitamin B, for example. Okay, so we have all these studies saying it prevents this disease and that disease and cancer, and it's going to increase everybody's immune system. Now, nowhere in that media hype has anybody mentioned that it's a fat-soluble vitamin. It's stored in the body. It's not easily eliminated. And an excess of vitamin B can cause a number of problems, including heart and artery damage. So I've got people walking in my office with bags full of vitamin D. Some of them are taking 3,000, 4,000 units a day, which is very, very excessive. And it's what I call the morphic field. If everybody believes it's going to work, they're going to make it work even when it's doing damage. So you really have to be cautious of media hype.
You want us to trust the inner physician. Explain what you mean by that.
That's exactly right, and I think we are much further ahead if we can trust the inner physician rather than the nightly news. To me, that would make a much more wiser decision. So the inner physician, that's the inner knowing, the inner knowledge that we have inside of us. It's what I call the vault. You know, we all have this vault inside of us that contains not only personal knowledge and personal wisdom, but it draws from the collective consciousness and universal knowledge and universal wisdom. And we can draw on that. Sometimes we can draw that information out of the subconscious by quieting the mind, going into the alpha state, doing meditation, setting intention on what kind of information we want. But we can also access that information in a quicker, more accurate way by using kinesiology, so that the body is able to communicate and express what energy patterns are healthy for it and which energy patterns are negative.
Well, it just makes sense. It seems, as you speak and as I can see clearer and clearer, how the importance about we've got to gain confidence about taking charge of our own health.
Yes, we really do, and we've been taught the opposite. And we've also been taught to fear our bodies and to fear our health. So, you know, everybody's afraid of the big C word, and everyone's afraid of those chronic illnesses and debilitating illnesses. And instead of instilling confidence, as you say, in not only recognizing what the risk factors are for those diseases, and once we start to show any signs of those diseases, being able to take charge and avert any problems, instead we are conditioned to fear what might happen to us, and then we run to the medical profession, and they always seem to be in a bit of a rush. You know, we better do this quick and do that quick, and the patient doesn't have time to think clearly about what it is they want to do and what, in fact, is best for their health and their personal lives. So I think one good piece of advice, if you are dealing with the medical profession, is don't be rushed. Really take your time. And don't make your decisions based on fear that's been instilled to us through the medical society. You know, disease is not something we should be fearing. If you have symptoms or health problems, this is your body communicating to you that there's an imbalance somewhere, and it's likely that that imbalance is not going to be life-threatening, but that your body wants to be heard. It's truly your temple.
And what's great about what you're advocating to me is that all of this is based on science and clinical practice as well. And, of course, you know, you gain these insights into our own well-being, as you've already talked about, this inner physician, this medical intuitive. It's a great way to It's holistic. That's what we're talking about, right? It's holistic.
It's talking very holistic, and I do have a Bachelor of Science in Clinical Nutrition, and I did have a high interest in chemistry and biochemistry. And as a medical intuitive and healer, intuition is based on knowledge, and I do write about this in the book as well. So the more knowledge you have, the better your intuition is going to work for you. So if you ask me to intuit to help you build a rocket engine, I'm probably not going to be of too much help because I don't have a lot of knowledge about building engines in my vault. But I do have a lot of knowledge and experience, and clinical experience, on healing people and using nutrition and diet and natural medicines and being able to recognize and identify what is it that's ailing that person and what is the true underlying cause. So then once you start working with your intuition, it all integrates together, the knowledge, the wisdom, the intuition, and anyone can learn to be skilled at that. So the knowledge and science has a role here in that we can use the knowledge of science to help us get well, but not in a state of fear.
Very well put, Marijke. The title of the book, Healing People, the Marijke Method. Marijke, tell us how to get your book.
Oh, you can buy the book in different bookstores. You can purchase the book through Balboa Press. You can purchase the book through Amazon, and you can purchase the book through my own clinic and company, which is Riva's Remedies. And I also have a second book written for horses called Healing Horses Their Way.
You're also in the process of writing another book.
Yes, I would like to write a third book. I'd like to. I think I've established with these two books the solid foundation of health information and healing programs, and I'd like to write a third book on being a little more esoteric now and writing more about people's spiritual lives and how that affects their relationships, which is a big point of suffering for a lot of people, is our interaction with one another and our relationships, both personal, intimate, in the community, and so on.
Marijke Vandewalder, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you very much. I very much enjoyed it.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Movement of Stillness, as revealed in the new Mayan calendar post-2012, and the author is Jackie Durbecker. And Jackie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Jackie.
Hello. Thank you, Stephen, for having me.
Well, great to have you with us, and we're going to learn a lot about Edgar Cayce and your relationship with the late Edgar Cayce and how this book is because of him. Let me read a couple of things you've written about this book. You say this book will help you move into your own inner authentic self. It will break down barriers so you can see and feel who you truly are. And you reveal through this book about 100 prophecies or all truths stemming from this calendar, this Mayan calendar. And of course, you say post-2012 because there were many thought that the world was coming to an end on December 21st, 2012.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. What this book is, first of all, I want to go back to the title, if I may, Movement of Stillness. And we're living during a time, you could call it an energy, of asking ourselves, what do we really want to do in life? Who are we? What's happening? What's going on with my own self? And why am I not feeling still? And what the premise of this book is, it's indicating, and the messages within this book is saying that you are already still. You're actually, some would call it a walking prayer, a walking mantra. I felt to call it a movement of stillness. So, see, when we're born as love. And what happens is we start to believe something different than that through our parents, through our grandparents, through society. And then we start to collectively start to believe that perhaps we're not good enough, or we're very, very good, look at me, or we're too tall, too short, too this, too that. So what happened here with this particular book, when it moved through me, and again, that I channeled into the Edgar Cayce, and I'll talk what that means. Inside of this book, Stephen, what happened was different short pieces to read about how to move into that still point of who you really are. And so when I was channeling into Edgar Cayce, he was talking about the prophecies that which are happening right now on the planet and further into the next number of years of how that is going to happen naturally to all of us. And so, sure, it might hurt at first. There's a lot of pain right now. But sometimes we have to go through forms of pain in order to get to the stillness, which is the core to our authentic self, which is what I was talking about with what you were just reading there.
Right. Well, tell us how this all began, Jackie. How did you become a channeler, and especially this relationship with the late Edgar Cayce?
Of course. On my 37th birthday, which would be about 14 years ago now, I was in forms of depression, and I was asking in my journal, I was writing, asking, who am I? What's my purpose? And Steve, my hand just started to write. It's called automatic writing, or you could call it channeling, you could call it streamlining, and I felt a large warmth around me gather, and literally my hand was moving without any of my thought. And so what happens when that starts to happen, you need to pay attention to it. I thought, oh no, this is something must be wrong with me, but there isn't. And this is hundreds and hundreds of sheets filled with pencils and markers and designs and words 13 years later. So when I tapped into Edgar Cayce, which would be about 2 years ago, what I saw was through the automatic writing, he presented himself in front of me and then also with a golden ball. Inside this golden ball was a book that he wrote of the prophecies for the planet through crystal energy. I know that sounds a little bit hippie granola. And so I heard him, I saw him, and I wrote the book in front of me that I saw in front of me through the automatic writing. When you open yourself up to
channeling or automatic writing, you can have different spirits, energies approach you to say, may we work through you to create a book. And Edgar Cayce was the one that came forward, and I agreed to that. So that's how this book was birthed. Now, what I did, though, when you're doing automatic writing and you're channeling, you have to watch what you eat. You have to watch your energy. The best time to channel or do automatic writing is 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. So I isolated myself in an inn. It's like a ranch in New Mexico up in the mountains. And I stayed there for a number of weeks, and I would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and channel, do automatic writing for 8 hours straight, and I would only eat food from light, so fruits and vegetables. They cooked really simply for me. I didn't talk much to people because I really needed to maintain that energy inside of me and maintain it so that I could do the automatic writing and be very clear. And so that's how this was birthed. It really is a phenomenal experience, Stephen. I can't explain it. It's as if something is being birthed through you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edgar Cayce, just real briefly, share who he was.
Yeah, Edgar Cayce was born in the late 1800s, and he was a seer. He was called the Sleeping Prophet. He would channel into your essence. He would do a lot of medical intuitive information. He was known as a guru who connected the body, mind, soul, spirit together as one. He would fall asleep and he would talk and he would have someone record the reading for the client. I believe he could only do one a day. It was so powerful. And so that's who he was. So now today, there's so many books about him. I really didn't know who he was when I started to channel into him. But after studying and researching, there are courses taught about who he is and his understandings. And he was a pretty phenomenal man during that time and still is now.
Why the confusion about the new Mayan calendar? There were so many that thought that the world was going to end, but you had a real different perspective on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the confusion was about. You know, there's so much fear out there, and I think maybe people got it confused and thinking it was the end. One reason, perhaps, is they haven't been able to really discover the next Mayan calendar. Dusting off and looking through old textbooks, they can't and couldn't really find anything, so therefore some would think clearly that's the end of the world. What I heard through Edgar Cayce is that the old Mayan calendar, which was filled with script, intellectual information, pictures, etc., is no longer that calendar. It's just simply a circle with nothing in it. And what that circle indicates, what he was telling me, and what I visually saw, what he showed me, this is Edgar Cayce, was that the emptiness just simply means we're going back to the original, to our stillness, to our authentic self, and it's an energy on the planet that's shifting. No matter what we do to stop it, it's still happening. We're going back to oneness, to a connection of all on the planet right now. So therefore, people thought that, oh no, we don't have a new Mayan calendar, and so perhaps, I'm just surmising, they were thinking that, well, clearly it must be the end of the world because there's no direction. Meanwhile, what Edgar Cayce was saying, well, the Mayans already knew. They already knew that it was the time where there's nothing but everything all at the same time. And people will now need to move into the stillness of who they are and stop believing the old ideas, the old belief systems that you are not good enough, and concluded more from that, meaning war and hurt and injury. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, very much. And it's, so it's some kind of an age of enlightenment, a new age.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we are in the age of Aquarius. We're now out of the age of Pisces, which are two fish going the other direction. We're in the age of the solar. We're also in an age of transparency. When Edgar Cayce was telling me all of this information, I thought, of course this makes sense. Flow, water, transparency, all that has been hidden is now being revealed. So you'll hear more about whistleblowers. You'll hear more about people exposing truth. More of this will start to surface because it's an energy that's bringing this forward. You cannot stop it. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. What about these prophecies, as you call them, all truths? So you have about 100 of them. So give us a sense of what they're about.
Yeah, so the word prophecy seemed to be the same as all truth. So it's speaking about truth. So, for example, one is disease. And disease, which is broken down into dis-ease, and all disease is caused by being not still and being in pain and believing something other than is yourself. That's one of the prophecies, that we'll see more and more and more of a natural holistic healing movement coming forward. Okay, the other one, and there's so many of them, the other one is the financial situation. The energy of money is changing. And when you connect that to the age of transparency, when you connect that to it's a solar age, it's also the age of the heart, then the money will need to shift and change, and we'll see that happening. What we'll see from what Edgar Cayce was saying is we'll see more bartering system. You do this, and then I'll give you this, and moving more from that. Another prophecy, education, different forms of education, you'll start to see moving away from a curriculum to more nature, art, who are you, what do you really want to do, based curriculum for children. Parenting skills will be changing as well. We're seeing more parents wanting to know what to really do with their children, how to parent them better than what's been happening before. And so what it is, Stephen, it's the, if you think of it as a thread, I call it a golden thread in this book, the golden thread that it's pervasive. It's going through every aspect of our lives, whether it be relationship, job, education, medical. It's pulling out the truth. It's pulling out the original. It's pulling out the spirit. And that can be really painful because, for example, businesses that have been built upon ego, that have been built upon, say, greed and everything is for me, those types of businesses, because it's the age of transparency, it's the age of the water, that's the cleansing, they will dismantle and they will dissolve. And so that's where you're seeing more businesses are hiring a restructuring rehabilitation program to come into the business to assist. This is happening everywhere. And so even inside of yourself. So just by asking the question, who am I? Do I really want to be in this relationship? Do I really want to be in this job? That's part of the dismantling. That's part of the prophecy indicating everything is going back to the original. Everybody, we're all going back to one. We're all going back to love. We're all going back to peace. Are you familiar? Do you remember it was the fifth dimension who sang about the age of Aquarius back
right.
in the
okay. Right. Exactly.
That song is really relevant right now. Any form of songs by Joni Mitchell, by John Lennon, that time is now right now, which is fascinating to listen to a lot of those songs right now from the 60s and the 70s.
And also, of course, it's the title of your new book, Dismantling the Structure of the Ego.
Mm-hmm. And so this book just came out a month and a half ago, and it basically, one of the chapters in Movement of Stillness is about ego and spirit, and this book, again, Automatic Writing, moves through me. And it's that chapter from Movement of Stillness made into a book. So it's called Dismantling the Structure of the Ego. And the bullets on the front cover, one says, restructuring everything built upon ego. Another bullet, realizing ego is illusion, you are only spirit. Another bullet is saying, recognizing there is no longer a now moment. And I'll explain that. When we're born, as I said before, Steve, we're born as love. We're born as simply pure. We're born as just that essence. And when we start to believe what our parents are believing about themselves, and they start to imprint that into us, and then we add on top of that, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable, etc., etc., that is illusion. So when I say recognizing ego is illusion, that you are only spirit is what this book is about, it's also within this book. This is fascinating, Steve. If you look at the collective consciousness, I was in a at the University of Toronto for a radio show interview in the studio with the interviewer, and we had this incredible discussion about the collective consciousness. The thickness of the collective consciousness is so wrapped around ego that we needed to have teachings of being in the present now. So when you go to yoga or when you go to meditation and you find all the books in the self-help section on now, how to live in the now present moment, what was coming to me when I was writing this book through watching my hand is that we have to teach ourselves to live in 1 millisecond now moment to feel our stillness of who we really are. And as I was writing, it was saying that's how thick the illusion, the collective consciousness, the illusion of believing ego is. And so then as my hand was writing, as I was saying to this interviewer at the University of Toronto, I was saying, this is amazing because once we get to the point where we can release those illusions of not being good enough, of those old society pieces that we've believed that are not true, then we don't need the teaching of the now moment because we live that every single second of the day. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it does. You look at the world today, and it's obviously filled with ego, and it's very destructive, and we have to get back to understanding who we are, and that's what your book is about, and your new book focuses on this essence that we are. Movement of Stillness is the title, as revealed in the new Mayan calendar post-2012. We've been listening to Jackie Durbecker. Jackie, tell us how to get your book.
Okay, the book is at online at Chapters and Amazon and Barnes & Noble, as well as through my website, which is JackieConsults.com, and also through Balboa Press.
Thank you so much, Jackie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.